to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey. It's probably one of David's most poetic passages. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me. I'm going to explore that a little bit as we talk today. Last week was definitely something that Sarah and I didn't see coming, and it was kind of being in that shadow, in that valley. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. You found your way to the God Journey, and I'm glad you've joined us. Before we get into that, though, I want to back up a little bit and just talk about Kenya. Some of you have seen my blog, perhaps. If not, there'll be a link at the bottom of this podcast. You can check it out. But we've got an email this week that the West Pokot region of northern Kenya, it's kind of the northwest rural, very much out in the bush kind of area, very needy area, very unreached area, both with development and with the gospel. They're undergoing an incredibly severe drought. And our friend Michael Wafula, who's a brother who oversees IGEM, International Gospel Equipping Ministry, he's become a friend of mine, someone I've been with in Kenya, and also recently just with him in Israel. Sarah and I felt it important that he have some time with people who are kind of on the journey of learning to live in the affection of the Father, and a touch with a broad range of believers from around the world. And so we sponsored him to come to Israel and be with us on that trip, and we got a chance to be with him when he got back to Kenya from that trip, discovered from one of their people who'd been up in the area that there were people dying, and there were people that were starving to death and would die quickly if there was not relief brought. So Michael wrote me at the same time he's mobilizing a team of a couple of doctors and three nurses to go into that region and to try and bring some food, bring some water. What's happened is this incredible drought has just persisted in that region. They basically live off their cattle, and all their cattle are dead, and they don't have anything else to live on. And so the situation there is dire, not just with starvation and hunger, but with diseases now because of the weaknesses. And we're just asking people who have some extra right now in their pocket that they could share with people in that kind of need to do so. They're also going to do some outreach in that area. I guess it's a fairly unreached group, not only with the gospel, but also with non-government organizations or charity groups or whatever being in that area. So they're talking about getting some water up there, drilling some wells, doing some schools to help teach them other ways to live than just nomadically trying to chase the water when it's available. And so I want to help you. If you want to help us do that, you can. I'll also let you know, within 24 hours of putting that up on my blog, we had already received $10,000. Some of that actually came in before my blog because some people knew about this before. My website had been down most of the week, and there's some people that knew about this need before I was able to post about it and had already sent some money in. So we're really blessed to be able to put $10,000 there right now. I'm not sure how much more we're going to need, and I don't think that's going to cover it. Again, we don't pressure folks to do that. I think, I hope many of you have places you already give in the world. And there's lots of things going on. There's a family doing some work in Uganda with orphan kids, and that I know part of some of you participate with. And there's just things all over the world. And I hope you have a way to give your life away. One of the podcasts we did a long time ago was by a man who said when he came to Christ, one of the things he was taught was look for a place to care about in the world beyond yourself. And I hope you have that. If you don't, and you have some resource, and you want to help us in Kenya, I feel like God has, at least Sarah and I, and then I know some of you have captured some things with that as well for the widows and orphans in Kenya. That's a corner of the world God's given us. And I know when I mention it, I get emails from all the impoverished countries of the world, orphanages, can you help us? Can you help us? Can you help us? And it's not my purpose to take on the world, but I love the way God gives a relationship, and he gives us a place to participate with people. And at least for Sarah and me right now, we do some work in South Africa with some AIDS hospice folks, some AIDS relief down there, and we participate in this work in Kenya. And if you'd like to be part of either one of those with us, there's more information on our website page, and you can check there. I want to read you some emails we get going this morning, and all of these emails actually come from a response to the podcast we did a few weeks ago called Resting in His Love, and it really ended up with, we don't love except in rest, and that's why God works so much to invite us into his rest so that we can really discover what his love means. And I got a few emails about it, and I thought they were valuable, so I wanted to pass them on to you. This is from Donna. She says, "For years now, my husband and I have turned into your podcast for contact with others on our alike journey of removing the controls of religion and embracing Christ. So we've listened all through, you and Brad and on, right to this last week. This one this week, I feel you have outdone yourself." I don't know about that, but I enjoy the content for sure. "Or that just hit so true with me. I was overjoyed to have a struggle to put into such clear perspective. One of those, oh, wows, life is such an incredible journey. I think it is so true that God will not put us in a space of loneliness until we rest in his love first." I'm not sure we got that right. I think it might have been God will put us in a space of loneliness, but I'm not sure I agree with that either. I just think what God wants is to invite us into that rest. Everything good flows from the rest. Everything harmful flows from our own anxieties and fears and agitation that makes us act out in ways that actually move us further from the answers God has for us. But I'm going to go back to Donna's letter here. "How could we possibly love anyone else until we really understand what it is to be truly loved? To me, that's the essence of the gospel. We can try to love people. You know, I've got people who love me and tell me, I'm trying to love you here. And you go, you know what? Love is not what you think it is. Love comes from a place of affection and tenderness and life. Love is not you're doing something to me for my own good. To go back to Donna's letter, "Thus I understand my aloneness. You have played a part in helping me find my way to a better understanding of my battle in life." Good points, Donna. I appreciate going back to this podcast because I know for me, I live most of 42, 43 years in the agitation of trying to do something great for God and being frustrated with the things I saw and trying to make a better way forward and even, you know, hurting people in the process of trying to get them to do what I thought was best for them. And 20 years ago or so, or maybe a little less, God began to invite me into a very different space of living in his affection, of coming to rest in his affection, which I know people think, oh, so you just lay around and stare at the TV these days. No, I don't. Resting in his affection opens incredible doors to engage people and engage life in a way that's totally different than when we're managing our own fears and anxieties and either pushing with hard work to get other people to do what they think they should do, or in the frustration of being isolated and withdrawn and medicating ourselves with all kinds of worldly entertainment things, not even necessarily evil entertainment things, but just lots of it to medicate my own sense of unworthiness or my own fear or my own whatever. And that learning to rest in his love has been the most transforming thing in my life. To cease from our own labors to embrace his, the words of Jesus in Matthew 6, Eugene Peterson's The Message, I've quoted them tons because I love it. "What I'm trying to get you to do is to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to God's giving." My whole life up till 20 years ago was about how do I get from God, how do I get God's will, how do I get a ministry, how do I get a following, how do I get, how do I get healing, get my prayers answered, get. And there's been this huge transition. It's taken years. It's still ongoing in my life. I'm moving to, God, what are you giving me today? Did you just hear the rest in that? Even, you know, how do I get from God? And then, what are you giving me today? And there's a big exhale and a big rest. And, you know, it's not as easy as saying the words. I know that. This is a process. And people who undergo this process know it takes years. It's not something, oh, I'm just going to do that now. It takes years to find such a confidence in Father's affection that you no longer have to respond to your fears and anxieties. That you get to listen to what he's about. You get to recognize what he's about, and you slide into that experience in your life. Harvey wrote this way. He wrote it on the blog, so many of you have probably already seen it. He said, "Thanks again, Wayne, for sharing what was on your heart. It so happens that, once again, it aligned perfectly with what Father has been teaching us in the last couple days, right up until a half an hour before listening to the podcast. It was like you entered our conversation and finished it, and I have been so excited about the realization that my entire journey has simply been to bring me to a place where I let or allow Father to love me." I had always been trying to love him right. I thought then he would love me. How simple and wonderful it is to crawl up in his lap and rest in his loving me. Little broken me. I don't worry about loving him or people anymore. It seems he gets a great joy out of lavishing his love on me. Don't ask me how I know. I just know. A few of the side effects are tears of joy, being in love with him and loving others so much it hurts, and the rest of the body and mind like I have never known. How can it be so simple? Harvey, I relate to you, man. I think that's, you know, when you struggle and work hard and you're going to achieve and you're going to get this right and you're going to do it and you're just learning, reading, trying. And then you realize how simple it is when God allows us to find rest in his affection and love. And you look and go, wow, I was trying all the hard stuff. Sarah and I are reading through Matthew now after we've gotten home from being in Israel together. And just wanted, we were finishing up in the Old Testament and Joshua a bit, and then we kind of slid over to the New because we wanted to read about some of the stuff Jesus did in Galilee, having been there. And Sarah and I were reading through it the other day, and one of the themes early in Matthew, it just keeps coming up. God, I thank you that you didn't reveal this to the wise and noble, but to the simple, to children. That really is learning to be born again like a little child. This life of the new creation is not complicated. It seems difficult, I think, because we complicate it. We've got books to read, information to process, theologies to iron out, and we think somehow at the end of all of those things, we'll find this rest in his love. And the rest in his love does come from a revelation. It comes from his heart. And, you know, I got an email yesterday from someone in Brazil, and it was in Portuguese, so I had to translate it through Google Translate, and it's kind of a mess, but kind of reading through it, I get the idea. Here's a person that's just been driven by the religion in their life and how religion has failed them. And she's a daughter of a pastor who's now, you know, she's been in a relationship that turned out to be abusive, and then in another relationship that she was hoping would get into marriage, and it didn't, and she's feeling all alone, and everything's a waste, and she's had 3 or 4 boyfriends of late, and she's had sexual activity with them all, and she's just worn out. And maybe God doesn't love me. Maybe I've got some curse on my life. Maybe, and just goes, I just, you know what? I know this is hard. I know in the midst of our pain and our hurt and how are we going to get out of this, I know it's hard to take a deep breath, to wake up tomorrow morning and throw out everything you think you know about God. And I'm going to talk more about this in a couple podcasts from now because there's a neat little insight that I want to share with you that I got from someone, but not right now. And I know it's hard to throw all that out and wake up tomorrow morning and say, you know what, God, I don't know the first thing about you, and I want to know. How do I know I don't know? Because I'm so agitated, so in despair, so fighting depression, so. And I'm trying to mold around that everything I've been taught about God and things people have told me in God's name, and who am I to not know that they're better, that they shouldn't know more than me. And so I'm trying to put all that in, and I can't, and I'm just exhausted, and I don't know what else to do. You know what? Just to wake up tomorrow morning and say, God, I don't know the first thing about you. Would you show yourself to me? And then, yeah, I'm a big reader, man. Get some contemporary translation of Matthew, John. Begin to read the Gospels and get a sense of who Jesus is from the breath of the Spirit. Don't worry about those passages that seem over the top, filled with fear, because most of those are misinterpreted. But back up into those passages where Jesus is loving up on Peter or James or John and their brokenness and failure. The woman at a well, Zacchaeus, the stories just keep unfolding, and how Jesus is just saying, man, this was not given to the wise and noble. This is given to the most simple people, to people who struggle with sin, to people who live in the darkness. God wants to come and breathe life. The essence of the new creation is that God's come to bind up the brokenhearted, to heal those who are blind, to set the captives free. The essence of the gospel of the new creation is to enter into the brokenness of our lives and not just wave a little magic wand. Everything becomes better by noon, but to invite us into a different space of being known and being loved so that we can know and love in return. Him first. Yeah, absolutely. Get that relationship synced up. And what you're hearing in email, and I hear it all the time, this is not, we can fix it by noon. And I think religion has done that. Let's all have an altar call. We're all going to come pray and cry our eyes out. And we're all going to go home. It's all going to be fixed, all going to be better. And people go home, and they go home euphoric because those things are cathartic in some way. And then they wake up the next morning, and all the same fears and anxieties and despair and struggle are still there. And they're thinking, well, I'm just a failure. And religion does that to us. It just keeps beating us up with, this experience will change this, and you'll be different forever. Most of what God does, and I'm not disparaging moments where everything turns in a second. God makes himself known. Things just change overnight. That does happen. It is incredibly rare. So I just don't think we bank on that. If it happens, celebrate it. I'm all good with it. But I think for most of us, there's this awakening inside the new creation. There's this growing reality of God with me, and I'm not alone, and his fingerprints and his whispers are in my mind, and it begins to open my heart to a different way of living. And as I follow those nudges, my life pulls back to a more spacious place of where God makes himself known, of where I don't have to achieve. And, you know, some of that invites us back out of the captivity of 21st century life in the Western world or in America, wherever you are, that we're so replete with entertainment, so driven by responsibilities. Every day is filled with noise. And, part of that is get out of those environments. Go for a walk. Sit in a garden. Find a chair in your home where you can just sit without your iPad, iPhone, and just let your heart go to him and let his come to you. And I don't mean, you know, sit there and try to make something happen. I mean, just break the trend of always having noise in our lives and always being rushing from one thing. Busyness is a way we hide from him. Busyness is a way we hide from our own sense of insecurity that I'm not good enough, not doing enough for him, should be doing more. And if I'm busy, I don't have to wrestle with those thoughts. And what God's inviting us into is the space that lets us see through the brokenness of those thoughts into life with him. And then Tom wrote this email to me. He said, we've recently been attending a fellowship/organization where I've been handling out your books and pointing them to podcasts. We'll fellowship until they throw us out. Anyway, maybe some podcast fodder, but for us, for many years after leaving the institution, we wandered about wanting to find a group of people to do our thing, much like you hear all the time. We came in and out of the institution, seeing it for what it is, but still hoping to find friendships that would survive outside of the meeting. Over the course of 7 years, we wondered, why do we attract so many people who eventually hurt us? Oh, gosh. Oh, man, that just... I think many of you can relate that. Why do we keep attracting people who hurt us? And part of it is because religion's about control. You love someone by getting them to do what you think is best for them. That will hurt every time when people try to push you into their way of doing things. And when you question, when you hesitate for a minute, you get attacked by people who then you're unsubmitted or you're this or you're that. Why do we attract so many people who eventually hurt us? I mean, that I tell you, those are my days in religion too. Not that I didn't have great friendships there, because I did. But at some point, those friendships would reach a point where people have got to poke you because you're not doing what they want. And doing what they want makes their environment more secure. And if they're going to find their security off of how other people respond, then they are going to manipulate you and it is going to hurt. So as long as you look for your fellowship in a religious conformity-based environment, yeah, you will get hurt. And the people will hurt you with the greatest amount of love and smile. I'm only doing this for your own good. And that God's led us to do this to you. They don't say that. They'll say for you, but it's to you. He goes on to say this. Both my wife and I, being raised in somewhat dysfunctional and damaging homes, have parents claiming to be evangelicals but entrenched in ways of manipulation and control. He just said what I just said. We found that we were drawn to people that mirrored our parents and sought to gain an approval that we never got in our upbringing. Once we realized that and ran full steam in the other direction, good on ya, we began to truly relax into the love of the Father and discover the true reality of how much he loves us and what we have to offer the world. We've begun freeing ourselves from the yoke of bondage, and you're totally right. When you stop looking for a community, That's the very moment you find it. Wow. Thanks, Tom. I know it's hard to hear. I know people are desperately searching for it, trying to create it, trying to, you know, read books, get workers in, trying. There's got to be a way we can do this on our own. When you finally come to rest in His love, that's the theme of what's on my heart today. When you come to rest in the fact that God knows and God cares, I can know Him inside that loving and caring, and He can nudge me toward things that when He nudges me towards things or connections or people in my life, then they don't have to become hurtful relationships, because the people He's going to nudge me toward and the friendships He's going to invite me into are not people who are trying to control and manipulate me with their agenda or their desired outcome or their bit of wisdom they want me to know. I find, you know, when you just share freely, if God's speaking that to people, they'll come to know that. If He's not speaking it to them, then you don't have to embellish it, push it even more, trying to. There's such a relaxed way to live when you're at rest in His love. And I what I love about that is that pays dividends for a lifetime. Last week, and I can't share all the details about this because it's my parents' issues, and you know, I'm not, they didn't bargain to be public folks, but they've kind of reached one of those crunch points a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago now. And called on the family, called on my brothers to come. We need some help. And we got up there, and yeah, just it appears that Mom might be losing the ability to take care of herself, and Dad can't do enough. They're both in their mid to upper 80s, and just can't do it anymore. And I use this phrase when we open the post. Even though I walked through the valley of the shadow of death, I was with Jack Gray a couple of years ago in New Zealand. And he talked about being in the valley of the shadow of death as the years he's now living past his wife of, I think, over 60 years of marriage, who passed away, oh, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago, maybe 8. And now he lives in the shadow of her death, where his lifetime companion is gone, where he's now in his 90s. And when hear him talk about it, and the trust and rest, not the frustration, God, why me? And oh, won't you take me home sooner? I've known people that get there. Someone wrote me this week in my own parents' dilemma, saying they're shocked how few Christians get to end of life issues. And it doesn't appear that my mom is on the verge of dying. I know people kind of think that's what we're talking about when we talk about end of life issues, and I don't really mean that. I just mean we all came into this world helpless. And most of us, unless you die in a tragic accident suddenly of some type, most of us are headed to leave this world in a state of helplessness, increasing helplessness. That's what happens when the body wears out. We've been through this before with Sarah's parents. We went through it 15, 20 years ago, as we walked them to death's door and watched them, you know, realizing that their declining abilities frustrated and angered them and depressed them, and they took it out on people around them. And someone said to us back in the day, you know, the last thing you owe your kids is to die well. And I grabbed onto that. You know what? I have, Sarah and I have said the same thing. I know from a previous generation, there's always that don't want to die alone, don't want to die other than at home, and we're trying to make that happen. We have all these expectations. But you know what? I find this, I don't think Christians prepare well for what the end of the life issues look like. I think most of us kind of get the idea that, you know what, we'll keep loving Jesus, and one night we'll just go to sleep and not wake up. And, you know, it doesn't happen that way. For the vast majority of people, these bodies wear out. And there's a way to watch them wear out and still engage that rest and love of the Father in it. It's what I love about the things we've been learning in the last 20 years is that I'm inside these very same circumstances now with my parents that we were in with Sarah's parents 20 years ago, and I'm different. It's my parents even, and I'm going to shoulder some of the care as we head that way with them. And so I'm much more at risk here than I was before, but my heart's at rest. And that phrase has just been on my heart all week. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and that's where I was last week. I was with my parents, honestly, from morning till night. Didn't make one choice to do anything Wayne wanted to do or needed to do or should do. It was simply, what did I need to do next to help resolve what was going on with my parents, to help my dad and mom and with my other brothers through a very difficult time in their life to find a way to move forward. And it wasn't easy. My goodness, exhaustion, talking about being up at night because of needs that had to be there, getting so far behind on sleep, still not fully over the jet lag coming back from overseas. And yet now into a different thing, it was exhausting. And here's the things that help you at moments like that. These are the things I was thinking about, going, you know what? Right now, in the valley of the shadow of death, you have to stay in the moment. You have to stay there. You have to live there. And I don't mean the moment is today. I know Matthew 6 points us that way. Every day have enough worry of its own, so take no thought of tomorrow. This was really take no thought of the next hour. This is, can I put my foot in front of me for the next moment and stay in that moment? What's next? What wisdom is God giving? What grace is He giving? And I'm thankful that I'm learning that in other areas of my life, so that now when you get into the valley of the shadow of death, and I think that's maybe some of what David's pointing at. David's a little shepherd guy. What's the valley of the shadow of death for him? Could it be when he's out there at night with the flock and the wolves or whatever predator they've got in Israel is wandering the hillsides and baying at the moon, and you feel like you're at risk? Do you win that trust? Do you win for God is with me? Do you win that? And I do. I always think these things are better to win at the lesser moments of extremity. But as I said, most of us don't prepare well. So we kind of get into these situations, and then lo and behold, I'm angry and frustrated that I'm losing my ability to care for myself, or I'm losing my independence. I don't have the freedom to walk over there and get that if I want it, or to do that. And I understand that that's frustrating. I do. But how did you think life was going to end? How did you think? This, we've watched so many people do it. I think there's this amnesia thing we do, where we block out what's going on with other people around us, and we don't realize that someday that's going to happen to me. And how am I going to handle it? And do I want to handle it in a way that's generous to the people around me? And, you know, if you find a way to live in the rest of Father's affection now, you'll find rest of being His affection then. And you'll find the grace. What we found about grace was it's an every moment thing. As soon as Sarah and I would talk about, well, what about next? What about tomorrow? What about next week? What about what if this happens? And what if that happens? And when you live in the valley of the shadow of death, let me tell you, grace dissipates when you look downrange. It does. I like the idea. I've said it before. I've heard it before. We cannot imagine grace. Grace is something far beyond anything we could ask or ever conceive. So when we start into our imagined futures and try to figure out what to do, we're there without grace. We're there just me, and I've got to try and do the best I can do, and fear. And once fear sets in, anxiety sets in, grace, our ability to see grace, just dissipates. Not that grace dissipates, but our ability to see it even in the next 3 hours, or the next 5 days, or the next 6 months, gets lost. And so we come back to that moment of saying, God, what are you asking me to do right now? We're going to take one step at a time, and we're going to watch your grace unfold. And in those moments, the grace is full, free, easy to see. Easy to see in the moment. And then when the what if question comes, boy, it's amazing how it starts to, I don't know. And you know what? One of the things Sarah and I have stopped doing is we're not dealing with hypotheticals. We're not. Sometimes good planning is to deal with hypotheticals, but it's exhausting when you're already on the edge of exhaustion to try and figure out, okay, if that happens, what are we going to do? And instead of just saying, okay, when that happens, we'll have grace to do what's next. Yes, in the valley of the shadow of death, your world gets smaller. That losing freedom and independence, I know, you know, part of growing up was that, you know, the frustration of childhood is I can't do the things I want to do. And how many times have I heard my kids and grandkids say, I don't want to, that's why. And then you get to the place where you pretty much can do what you want to. Your days are filled with desires. Well, I'd like to do this today, and I think I'll do that today. And, you know, there's responsibilities that mitigate that totally. But you can maneuver your life to get into space where you get chances to do the things you want to do. And you got the freedom to, you know, go out to dinner over there if you want or choose that for dinner. And then you end up in space that's so much smaller. And you don't have the freedom of independence to do what you want in a moment. You become dependent on other people. And man, if you're not at rest in God when that happens, boy, the frustration, the despair, and what you put on your people around you because you're not happy, they're not happy. We noticed in this that all the choices we had were not good answers. There was no good answer. All you come down to is the alternative that is least hurtful, least destructive. But is God not there too? Is God not there when he says to Peter, the time will come and men are going to lead you away after their own things and you're going to lose your freedom? And he was imprisoned and killed later in his life. And Jesus talks about those moments. Is he not real there? Is his love not ours there? And if we've grown up with a religious understanding that I have God's love when circumstances are well and I'm in control, then when you find out that you're not, and I think what old age unmasks and circumstances in our life can do it too, you're really not as in control of your life as you think you are. You may have some great freedom in which you can make the choices you make and do the things you do, but ultimately you're not the one that decides the outcome of your life. We live in a broken world, and stuff happens to wonderful people that's hurtful, that finally puts them in smaller places. Old age eventually catch up to you, and you're not going to be able to do the things you want to do and say, well, Wayne, this is really a dour hour. I don't know if it's a dour hour. To look at reality and say, this is coming at some point, and if I'm learning to live at rest in his love now, I'll be cared for then too, and I'll be free. It's why David can go hit Goliath and go face. He's walking into that valley to meet Goliath. Isn't that not the valley of the shadow of death? If God's not with David, if this is just about human strength versus human strength, David's going to lose. But if he's learned to trust God when he was a shepherd with the predators in the pack, then is he okay going down to meet Goliath with that same God and be at rest in that? When you're only doing what's available to you and they're not good choices, man, does that hurt? Does that hurt for people you love? Wish we could find the perfect solution here. We can't. So we're finding the least objectionable one, and we're trusting that grace is bigger and God's presence is bigger. And no matter what that answer ends up being for us, there's always a way. Always a way, if our hearts are at rest in him, that we can be a blessing to others, to our own kids and spouse who are walking us through this, to the people that we may be in a care center of some kind. There's ways to be a blessing to others when we're at rest in ourselves and have the freedom to move on. And here's the one thing about the valley of the shadow of death that I think is a real positive thing. We sing the song, it's the old chorus, turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. And we sing that, you know, and that seems really cool. I want the things of this earth to go strangely dim. You know what they really do in the valley of the shadow of death? What was real important to Sarah and me last week was not temporal things, but eternal things. They take center stage. When we realize we're not in control, we're under God's light and presence, that the things that we value most transcend death. They'll be there on the other side. What we value, what we need to value least are the things of this age that do corrupt and do get destroyed and do wear out. Paul said it this way, though our outward man is withering, it's shrinking, it's becoming weaker day by day, the inner man grows stronger and stronger. I love that. I love the idea that, yeah, we're here, and maybe death, and maybe the difficulties of death and the helplessness of death. I like the idea. I don't know how true it is, but I like the idea that some of that losing control, some of that being helpless again, is actually God using death, which is his enemy. I'm not saying death is God's friend, but that as our lives slow down, he's preparing us to be in a world where we don't have to be in control, where we do value the things that are worth valuing, where our, and so maybe that's all a part at the end of our lives of God preparing us. I don't imagine that the womb of a baby, the womb in the baby's in, doesn't become horribly uncomfortable, and that part of what pushes the baby out into this world. I wonder if the issues in the valley of the shadow of death aren't part of God preparing us for a better world, a bigger world, a larger world, an understanding of it. Paradise now, new heaven, new earth later. But if God isn't inviting us into greater space, and that the very shaping of those things on our soul, even in our hurt and brokenness and despair, is not part of that shaping, where the things of earth grow dim and his glory and grace get more real and more real until the veil between those worlds is crossed. I don't know. Like I said, my mom and dad are not at the point of ending their lives at this point. We're not that, but we're in end-of-life issues and care, and how much money have we got? What kind of care can we afford? How do we walk with them through it? How do we be responsive sons and daughters-in-law in the process? So we're in the midst of all that, and I'm okay. I want to help my parents at the end of their lives find as much freedom and joy as we can find them, and the kind of care that will keep them as comfortable as possible, as long as possible. And I love in knowing that, in knowing this experience now, very different from Sarah's parents, and we were much younger and more fraught with our despair and anxiety, and you know, trying to get God to do what we wanted, and he wasn't doing it. To now being in this situation, in some ways more desperate, and yet knowing this is all in his hands. And we're just going to walk through it with him, and it doesn't mean everything happens the way we want it. It means most things probably won't. But he'll be with us in it, and in the being with us, we'll be at rest in his love. And being at rest in his love means we'll get to see what it is that he's doing and follow it. So we're going to walk my parents through this, and others of you have done it. A lot of people have written me saying, you know, we're going through this or about to go through this with our parents as well. And you know what? When we're at rest in his affection, there's ways to negotiate it. And there's ways to be at rest when other people around you are frantic. And rather than let their franticness draw you into their space, to let your rest and courage draw them into yours. And then we'll get through the valley of the shadow of death and find that God is with us. And we'll know that all is well, even when it doesn't look like it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,